seems like most everything comes from Asia these days. Some good, others not so. One not so good is Huanglongbing, or yellow dragon disease. This plant killer leads us to ask, can we save our citrus from the yellow dragon?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 779th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Findhorn, Scotland, who are tuned in. Stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Rick O'Shea on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, Huanglongbing is an incurable bacteria disease that kills by destroying the vascular system of plants. Quite literally, it chokes them to death. Up until 2008, Huanglongbing was listed together with anthrax and Ebola as potential agents of bioterror by the U.S. government. Huanglongbing travels on the wings of the Asian citrus psyllid, an aphid-like insect that feeds on the leaves and stems of citrus trees and other citrus-like plants. Though very, very tiny, the Asian citrus psyllid has carried Huanglongbing far and wide, causing devastation in Asia, India, the Middle East, South and Central America. The psyllid is now eating its way through Mexico, Hawaii, Texas, Arizona, Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, and now it's into California, Southern California. Travels on packages of fruits and plants, including citrus, ornamentals, herbs, and cut flowers, shipped by people like you and I, from nation to nation and state to state. Now, the federal government no longer lists Huanglongbing as a potential agent of terror for the simple reason that the bacteria is now endemic in the United States. That Huanglongbing is no longer a potential agent of terrorism does not mean it's any less dangerous. And so today we pause to ask, can we save our cities from the yellow dragon? And who better to ask than the fourth-generation citrus grower, Aaron Dillon, Four Winds Nursery in Fremont, California. Aaron, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Good to have you aboard. Fourth generation, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we've been at it for quite a while.
Uh-huh. I mean, why did you stay? Why didn't you want to run off and do something else? You're fourth generation, that's...
Well, I definitely grew up in the nursery business, mm-hmm. and it's something that I've always enjoyed doing.
No wanderlust, huh?
Well, I did. It's kind of a ironic twist that my dad always encouraged me to do something else. That someday, some bug might show up, and they'll lock the gate. And they won't let you sell the plants. And so you should get into something else. So I did. For about a decade, I had various other jobs, did graduate school, and in working on a master's degree in geography, I took an ag geography class, and it sort of rekindled my passion for agriculture, and I sort of found my way back to the nursery.
And now they're locking the gate.
Now we have the potential that this bug has shown up, and they may lock the gate, yeah.
Papa was right on. Yeah. Well, four generations, you know, that's a lot of accumulated knowledge, and does a lot of it, Do you get to keep a lot of that? I mean, when your great-great-grandfather learns something and tells your great-great-grandfather and so on down the line, do you get to keep that?
Absolutely. We've got amazing sets of records. It's been a real exciting process to kind of unearth some of these old files and find my great-grandfather's notes in the margins of program catalogs from trainings. And, you know, it's just the nursery industry in California has evolved so much from when they started. It's just kind of fascinating to watch how it's changed from, you know, a small backyard kind of mom and pop style operation to this, you know, now dynamic, you know, industrial agricultural complex.
When you say nursery, so explain to people who do not know what exactly a nursery is.
Yeah, so we're a production nursery. So our focus is on grafting trees. Citrus, like avocados, are not true to type. So if you take a seed and you grow that seed into a tree,
who knows?
It's going to be different, yeah, than what you started with. So it's important that you are going to do some sort of grafting process to ensure that you're going to get the same thing every time.
And that's a skill.
It is a skill. And we've got a couple ladies that do our grafting, and they're three sister-in-laws. We've had many folks who have been working for us for 35 years, and it's an incredible art. And really, the propagators are the heart of the whole thing. And that's where my grandfather, Don Dillon Sr., was a founding member of the Western region of the International Plant Propagator Society. So it really is all about the propagators and being able to make plants. It's this amazing kind of...
I always like that word, propagator.
Yeah.
It's like you take an idea and you make a whole bunch of them and propagate them.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And we have definitely a great legacy in California in the citrus nursery portion of the industry of this incredible emphasis on producing clean plants and really high quality material in the system.
Well, in the introduction, you made a real interesting comment about what your father said or your grandfather said. Someday they're going to come and lock the gate. What was he talking about?
Well, we face the potential of quarantine. You see, nursery stock in we kind of refer to as a clean plant system. You have to have clean material in your farm system. If growers who are producing the fruit are producing a crop...
If somebody's propagating a bad idea...
Right, exactly. If that gets out into the system, you then spread the disease or the bug, for a much wider area. So having clean nursery stock is a vital component in any kind of clean plant strategy.
So you're like the focal point of everything the nursery is then.
Absolutely. Everything generates from there. So if you have a problem with the material you're using as your sources, it gets replicated.
So when your father said someday somebody's going to come and lock the gate,
you face the potential that a bug may come and put you into a quarantine where the movement of your plants poses a danger.
And you may not even have that bug on your nursery.
That's correct. It could be within some geographic distance away from your nursery that puts you into a higher risk category.
And so what your father was telling you is that circumstances beyond your control could force the locking of the gate and put you completely out of business.
Absolutely.
And let's go away and do something else, son. But you didn't. You stuck there, and now you're faced with this Huanglong Bing.
That's right. Well, it's the psyllid is the vector.
And the psyllid is the vector.
Right.
Correct.
Right now, the psyllid, the Asian citrus psyllid in California, is kind of posing us some significant challenges. They did have one find of a bacteria infected tree in the East Los Angeles area of Hacienda Heights.
Now, before we go there, what percentage of your Four Winds nursery business is citrus?
It's the bulk of the business. I would say probably 75%. Yeah. We have diversified. That was one of my sort of pet projects before taking on this challenge of the psyllid, was that we were primarily a citrus nursery. We dabbled a little bit with avocado, some other types of edible plants, but I really became kind of passionate about sustainable gardening and more sustainable living situations and doing my geography degree, and felt it was important that we diversified and were able to better serve that kind of growing market for fruit and fruit trees.
Now we Californians and actually people all throughout the southern tier of the United States are kind of like citrus bonkers, aren't we? We just love my front yard is... well populated with dwarf citrus trees. And so when I saw this come through, I thought, this is interesting. And so it's not just commercial growers that are looking at being affected here. It's really just everybody who loves citrus is up against it with this.
Absolutely. I mean, citrus is such an iconic image for California, which is really the basis of our whole business. My great-grandfather, Floyd Dillon, was the founder of Four Winds Growers. So he moved out to California in the 40s, and his whole career, he was in retail sales. Mm-hmm. So he was always interested in trying to look at what next year's trend was going to be, the hot color or the hot fashion. And he was... saw that there was going to be this big population boom in California after World War II, that people who shipped out to the Pacific from the Midwest got a little taste of life in California. They weren't going back to the cold, snowy winters. They were going to stay here. And he thought, better symbol of California is than an orange. And in learning about apple trees, he learned that you could graft apple trees onto rootstocks that would give them a dwarfing habit. And at this time in the world, the focus of citrus variety development, citrus nursery production, was all for growers. So big mm-hmm. trees, 20 feet tall, 25 feet wide, not appropriate for your post-war suburban backyard.
Right, right. And now we're looking at two industries. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. We have a little fun today talking about a very frightening disease. I mean, this is incurable killer. And it's a killer of citrus. And you and I both love citrus, whether we grow it, whether we buy it at the store. We're all looking at a very serious situation here. So we're going to come to grips with it today and figure out how we can fight Wong Long Bing, the dreaded yellow dragon disease. With us today, Aaron Dillon, Four Winds Nursery, a fourth-generation grower of citrus, somebody who knows all about this stuff. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Want to have any questions? You're invited to pick up your phone today and call us, 831-479-1080. Right back with Wong Long Bing.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, it's called Wong Long Bing, or the yellow dragon disease. And what the bacteria does, essentially, is that it destroys a plant's vascular system. In particular, this bug destroys the vascular system of citrus, thus choking the plant to death. It is an incurable disease, and at one time was listed right there with anthrax and Ebola as potential bioterror weapon. No longer listed as a potential bioterror weapon because it's everywhere, and there it is. But there's one place where it is not, and that is California. We are relatively free of Wong Long Bing, the yellow dragon disease, or as they call it around here, what is it?
Citrus greening.
Yeah.
CG.
And that's what we're looking at. What is California going to do to protect itself from this incredible bacterial disease? With us today, Aaron Dillon, fourth generation grower from Four Winds Nursery. Aaron, you were telling a fascinating story about how you're on the run. Your family's with Four Winds Nurseries. Is that why you call it Four Winds?
Well, the Four Winds was actually a speakeasy that my great-grandfather drank at during Prohibition.
Okay, there it is. All right. But you talked about how a long time ago the citrus industry, citrus nursery industry in particular, was located in Southern California, San Diego, L.A.
Well, really all the industry was all located. That's the more ideal climate for mm-hmm. citrus production, that great Southern California weather, consistent warm temperatures, you know, ideal growth conditions for citrus. But what happened in California in the 30s and 40s, we had an outbreak of something called citrus tristasia virus. And so this is a virus that causes quick decline in mature trees. So a big tree will just suddenly crash and die, right? Mm-hmm. And it had to do with what rootstocks they were grafted on. Tristasia is vectored by an aphid. So a single aphid can pick up tristasia from an infected tree, land on another tree, feed, and pass it on.
Wow.
So very hard to control. But what the thing about tristasia is there are rootstocks that are more susceptible to tristasia, and then there are rootstocks that are more tolerant of it. In the 30s and 40s, everything was grown on a sour orange rootstock, which is produces great quality fruit, but was very susceptible to the virus. So all of Orange County and places like that that had a thriving industry went out because of Tristeza. So what happened in the state was that they enacted a quarantine line, which is still in place today. So basically I-5 to Tehachapi Mountains, the Grapevine, kind of Santa Barbara area. If you grow citrus nursery stock in that zone, you're not allowed to ship it into the rest of the state.
So nobody grows citrus in that zone?
No, absolutely. Everyone still grows citrus down there because it is, as you said,
such they grow citrus, but not citrus nursery stock.
No, absolutely. There's still citrus nursery production, okay. And you just sell it within that area. Southern California area. And it's been estimated that in Los Angeles County alone, there are more citrus trees in people's yards than there are trees in production in the whole state.
I would bet that.
Every house, maybe three or four trees, which is part of the real challenge that we face with the psyllid.
Yeah. And so your grandparents, to cope with this situation in Southern California, said, we're getting out of town.
Right. And that's what you saw in the 50s as this quarantine line started to shape up and groves were being succumbing to the virus in Southern California. The whole industry leapfrogged and started to settle where it is today in the Central Valley. So not the most ideal condition for citrus, very high extremes of temperature in the summer, very extreme cold in the winter. So you can actually get some benefit out of that. And you saw a real shift. That's where you started to see intense naval production. And now it's really focused on a lot of mandarin production.
Mm-hmm.
So, the whole industry sort of leapfrogged there. The nurseries all relocated into the valley to be close to their customers. But my great-grandfather, again, with his infinite wisdom and foresight, decided that he was going to try to get our nursery as isolated as possible so you have less pressure from potential.
So you moved to town, Fremont, California.
Right. Well, when we moved there in the 50s, it really wasn't town, right? It's a little bit different than it is today.
Yeah. And thus, you're out of the mainstream of production and relatively safe, or at least from, if something happens over there where everything is concentrated, and if that becomes quarantine, then everybody's in deep doo-doo over there, right?
Yeah, it certainly was a spot that was, had protection from the citrus industry and kind of, large-scale production close by. But as the Bay Area has transformed and become such an urban, metropolitan society and development pattern, it's actually become a spot that maybe is a little risky because you have a lot of material that moves in and out of, like, the Port of Oakland. Many of the invasive pests that we face, you saw them really start to rise to prominence in the 70s as container shipping started to become more of a mainstream way of moving material around the globe.
That way you can get a whole container full of bugs in, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. We did. Huang Long Bing, an incurable disease, and I described it as a vascular disease, right? How does that work?
Yeah, so basically it does affect the phloem of the plant and causes the tissue to degrade so that the plant can't move any kind of minerals or fertilizer up and down the stem of the plant.
So it gradually chokes a plant to death, but in the interim the plant lives, but it produces fruit. The fruit is not very tasty.
It takes the real challenge with Huang Long Bing in trees is that it takes 2 to 3 years before you're going to see any kind of visual symptoms that the trees become infected. So you have a long period of lag time before visually you're going to see signs of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it will the other problem is that you don't see it really evenly distributed through the tree. So you may only have one branch initially that's infected. And then slowly over time, if it goes unchecked, it'll get well spread through the whole thing.
And it's vectored by a psyllid.
It's vectored by a psyllid.
What the heck is a psyllid?
A psyllid is a small, very small bug about the size of an aphid. And
which means you can see it but if you have a nice magnifying glass, right?
Yeah, it's difficult to see. And from what I've heard from inspectors, it's also sort of a smart little bug that when you go to look at a leaf surface,
if it sees
you coming, it'll run away.
Oh, man. So how do you know it's there? How do you know you're in trouble?
You have to use traps, kind of sticky traps, mm-hmm. to monitor for
yellow cards.
Yellow cards. They don't have a pheromone lure yet to attract it. They're trying to work to develop an attractant, which will make it easier to detect.
Mm-hmm.
It is so small that when the officials are out doing their inspections, a lot of times they'll use these vacuum. It kind of looks like a leaf blower that you would wear on your back.
Reverse leaf blower.
Right, and they'll suck around the tree, and they can collect them that way.
Wow. So this is, and it's, and of course, vectored by a bug that's so small it's very hard to see and so smart that it doesn't want to be seen. And thus it can get around, because when we ship plants from one place to the other, we buy some citrus here, we pick a bunch of citrus from a friend's tree and ship it from there to here, and all of a sudden we're in trouble. And we're in trouble all over the world except for California. And now in Southern California, San Clemente, I believe, they discovered it. And so what are we going to do?
Yeah, it was discovered in East Los Angeles, an area called Hacienda Heights.
Hacienda Heights.
And, okay. You know, also besides just moving the bug around, what can happen more commonly is that you actually can move the bacteria around. So in this situation where they discovered a tree and the system actually
worked. So you become the vector.
Right. People smuggle budwood in. And budwood is the material we use to make trees. So it's a stick of a branch, you know, cutting of a branch that's got little buds that you would use to do your budding. You can top work that into an existing tree. And in this instance, that's what happened. There was budwood from a pomelo variety that was infected and was top worked onto an existing lemon tree. So, again, only a portion of the tree where this budwood had been inserted was infected.
And thus, but then the bacteria is here.
The bacteria is here. And so this, the system worked. There's a large-scale effort underway. And, again, the growers in California have stepped up and contributed just a tremendous amount of money to try to find the bug. The goal is to find the bug and find the infected tree before they can start rearing and producing more bugs
to
spread it.
So then the strategy, the great hope here, is that we will be able to keep this microscopic little vector seal it out, and thus keep the Huanglongbing disease out of California, which is the last place with no yellow dragon disease. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson here, Aaron Dillon, fourth generation grower from Four Winds Nurseries in Fremont, California. But, oh, we're on the move again. We're going to find out about why we're moving and what we're going to do, if possible, to keep the yellow dragon disease out of California, and what happens to the rest of the country where it's already endemic. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, what are we going to do about Huanglongbing, the yellow dragon disease that's going to threaten at least to eat up our citrus? It's here, it's there, it's everywhere in the world except for pretty much one place, California. And now it's been discovered in Southern California, so what do we do to cope with this incurable disease? Here to help us discuss the problem, we have fourth generation grower from Four Winds Nursery, Aaron Dillon. Aaron, it's incurable, right?
Thus far.
As far, the only way to protect yourself from it is to keep it out. And the only place we can keep it out. What is Florida doing?
It's a big problem in Florida because it is very widespread. And in what we have this kind of tremendous opportunity in California is to sort of react and learn from the mistakes that were made around the world.
Else, yeah.
And the main mistake that people made was to not take it seriously before things got out of hand. Mm-hmm. So in Florida, when the bug first showed up back in the late 90s, they didn't immediately take steps to move the citrus production nurseries under screen to start protecting those source trees. And they were in the midst of an eradication program for another citrus disease called citrus canker, which right. We won't get into now, but it's much worse. This is something that can be vectored on moist air. It's a bacterial disease.
Oh, float on the air.
Float on the air. So in Florida, they were in the midst of this eradication
effort.
Kind of like
the flu.
Yeah. So you can imagine what they were doing was going around and looking for trees that were infected, and they had a 1,900-foot rule. So wherever they found an infected tree, they removed all citrus trees within 1,900 feet.
Wow.
To prevent the spread.
Right.
This thing's so virulent. So that was going on, and the psyllid showed up, and they thought, well, we don't have the bacteria present in the state, so it's not a problem. Well, what happened was, just like in California, somebody had smuggled in budwood of a pomelo variety, grafted it onto an existing tree that then became infected. The psyllids found that tree, started to pick up the bacteria, and it got into something called Maria paniculata, which is orange jasmine. It's used as a landscape hedge.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know about the association of the psyllid and the Maria. It can actually hold the bug and hold the bacteria. So unknowingly, they shipped it all around the entire state of Florida. And by the time they started seeing symptoms, remember this is 2 to 3 year lag period. Uh-oh, we do have it. Well, then they surveyed, and it was everywhere.
And so is it having an impact on citrus production?
It is having a tremendous impact on citrus production. They have lost hundreds of thousands of acres since 2005 when it really became endemic and got out of hand. And they are in the midst of, again, kind of this challenge. They maybe didn't react quickly enough.
And now it's kind of beyond... It's
endemic, so endemic that now they are beginning to think about strategies of how to live with it as opposed to how to completely remove it.
Okay, before we talk about that strategy, let's look at California and see what our strategy is to keep it out. Is it possible, do you think?
Well, it's here now, and I think that's the real challenge. It's one of these bugs that unless you're really looking for it, and the damage that the bug itself causes in the absence of the presence of the bacteria is somewhat minimal. It's not going to tear the tree up too bad. So they started surveying. It was, again, about 2008 that they first found it in the San Diego area. And since that time, there's three distinct populations of psyllid within the state. So San Diego area, and then again down in the Imperial Valley, Tijuana, Tecate, both border stations where it's coming up from Mexico. And then in the East Los Angeles area. And the Los Angeles area is what's become the real hot zone. And
how the heck can you keep it from coming up from Mexico? I mean, it's so small you can't see it. It's so smart it doesn't want to be seen. And, I mean, if we can't keep people from coming in, how can we keep that from coming in?
Well, hence the challenge with this particular pest.
Okay. So when we do find it, like we have found it in L.A., what do we do?
Well, again, what's the growing industry in California has stepped up this tremendous effort to scout for the bug. So they're out surveying. They have traps everywhere, and the traps are checked regularly. And up until about a year ago, the strategy was everywhere that they found a bug, they would come in and spray that tree and drench it with a chemical to kill the bug, and then they would go out 400 feet and
but
treat.
But it would not kill the bacteria, right?
Well, once the bacteria is present, there's nothing to kill it.
Okay.
So the goal is to try to control the psyllid and prevent it from finding a potentially infected tree. We know now that you can test the bug and you can find that the bug is infected before you would see symptoms in the tree. So the system worked in the case where they had this one particular positive tree. They found a bug in a trap. It tested positive. They traced it back to the yard where the trap was, and they found the tree. And they removed it right away. And then they started surveying out. So they went out 400 feet, 800 feet, 800 meters. And they've tested trees and they've tested bugs. Thus far, they haven't found anything more with infection. So the hope is that they sort of pounced on it and maybe controlled it.
Uh-huh. Did they find the person who smuggled in the budwood?
They did.
Ooh.
Yes, this is a big lesson.
Did they put their picture in the newspaper? Joe Blow smuggled in budwood, destroys California citrus industry.
I believe that an intrepid reporter did find the name, and I believe it was actually published in the Wall Street Journal, which no one in the industry was very happy that happened, because you don't want to vilify a person for this, but it's more to educate people as to the dangers. You really can't. It's very dangerous to smuggle plant material around, to take a cutting, to take a seed from some plant. It seems innocent enough, but it has the potential to just wreak havoc.
Well, as this is wreaking havoc right now. So right now, we think we have it stopped, right?
Well, I don't think anybody really thinks we're out of the woods and that we're safe. The psyllid populations in this, you know, Los Angeles area, last year alone, they found over 13,000 sites where the psyllid was present. So it's so intensely spread in that area that they've decided they can't continue to fund the eradication effort. So they've started to move out to the edges, and they're going to try to concentrate on any outlying finds and pounce right on that and try to just keep this one population from really spreading further out. But the fear is, again, it's a very small bug. It's not a great flyer, but it can be aided by wind, so it can only move a few miles.
It moves with us. I mean,
it moves with us, exactly.
We carry it around. We're the vector of all of this stuff. Right?
So that's the big fear, is that you must not remove nursery stock, remove fruit with leaves, especially with leaves and stems attached, from these areas where the psyllid's known to be present.
So we're looking at really two populations of citrus in my mind. One is the commercial growers, who grow a lot of navel oranges in California.
Well, and mandarins. Mandarins have become the big focus now. Yeah. Seedless mandarins.
Oh, they're so delicious, too. So we here in California grow the eating oranges.
Correct. Fresh fruit production. Mm-hmm. Florida is mainly juice production.
Juicers, right.
And that's, you get a little bit of, you can work with greening infected trees a little bit better when you're doing juice blending. And what it causes is the fruit to become sour. So if you're blending it, you can kind of account for that a little better. When you're talking about fresh fruit, if they're infected, it'll work, right?
So forget it. So this is really significant for the commercial production, but it's also significant for all of us who have citrus in our yards, which is what most of California that has citrus of some kind in yards. Just drive down the street anywhere in California or anywhere where it's warm, and you see citrus now. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Mike Lolson. Today we're talking about Huanglongbing, the yellow dragon disease that's literally eating up our citrus throughout the world right now. One place we still are Huanglongbing free is California. And we're trying to figure out how to stay that way. And from all appearances, it ain't going to be easy. We'll find out what they're doing when we come back. Do stay tuned. Well, folks, consider this line in the sand. There is a conflict here now over this Huanglongbing between commercial growers and backyard growers. Think of yourself as a commercial grower with 1,000 acres of mandarins out there. Your neighbor has, you know, a backyard full of this and that and whatever, and that he looks at occasionally, but mostly not, walks out there once every 3 months and picks a lemon, and that's that. Now, there's a danger there.
Absolutely. It's a significant threat, and that's what we've all been told with the way this bug and bacteria would play out. The whole complex in California was that it would take 3 to 5 years after the psyllid was first found, you would find infection, and you would find it in an urban area. And sure enough, to a T, about 4 years after the psyllid was first present, they found an infected tree in an urban area.
And now, tell us about the threat this poses to the commercial growers and your part in it, because you're like Mr. In-Between here.
Absolutely. Again, nurseries are so important to have clean nursery stock in the system. If our material that we use to create trees becomes compromised and you start shipping infected trees around, you spread it everywhere. So the nurseries in California recognize this as a problem and recognize the fact that we had an opportunity to do something about it before the cat was out of the bag, so to speak, agreed to regulate ourselves. So in 2009, we got laws on the books through the state to mandate that we had to start moving our production material inside of screened buildings in an effort to make sure that the bug doesn't get onto those trees.
So you're moving from outside into a sterile environment. I mean, you have to be... tell us about the size of your screens.
Well, it has to keep out, by the standard, it has to keep out an aphid. So it's like a 0.33 millimeter screen, very fine mesh, cuts your...
Will it allow air in it?
It cuts your airflow by up to 30 or 40%. So it's significant.
So that's significant. And airflow is very important for a room full of plants.
Yeah, you got to maintain humidity and temperature. Yeah. And the standards are written so that they're performance-based. So nurseries are allowed to build whatever kind of structure they want. You could do the whole thing out of screen. You could do the whole thing with hard walls. They will evaluate our successfulness by testing the trees and making sure they don't become infected, and then putting traps, inspecting the traps, and making sure you don't find any of the bugs mm-hmm. that are a problem.
So whereas before you used to have plants out in a bucket in the field and you'd cruise by once in a while and feed them and water them, you're really at the point that your father talked about, where somebody's coming in and locking the gate. So what you have had to do is move your nursery stock from Fremont, California, to Watsonville, California. Build a greenhouse that's so secure a gnat can't get into it. And now you have to have the technological proficiency to be able to go nursery stock inside this controlled environment that is complete, that when you send it out into the world, is completely sterile.
Well, completely free of any sort of dangerous pathogens.
Well,
It's more than just the production side of it. You have to use clean source material. Yeah. I mean, but it is a very involved process. And I think people, you know, you can see a citrus tree for sale at your local garden center. It might cost $30 or $25 or something like that. People don't really appreciate all that goes into getting that tree onto the shelf.
So now when you sell that to a commercial to a regular retail nursery, what are they going to do with it?
Well, this is the challenge that we're going to try to work through. We know that there are chemicals that are effective at controlling the bug, mm-hmm. and it's a systemic chemical. So you apply it as a drench. It gets taken up into the system of the plant, so it's present inside the tissue.
A systemic chemical.
So when the psyllid lands on the tree and attempts to feed, it ingests the chemical and thus kills the psyllid. They know from research in Florida that the way the psyllid behavior works in terms of feeding. They know that an adult psyllid would have to feed on a tree uninterrupted for a period of, say, 45 minutes to an hour to pass enough of the bacteria into the tree to cause infection.
And so
what they've detected is that trees that have been treated, the psyllid lands, it takes a bite, ingests the chemical, stops feeding, and dies before it can pass on the infection.
Now, a number of years ago, a watermelon grower in the Central Valley got the bright idea that he could control the pests on his watermelon plants by using a systemic pesticide, which, of course, got into the watermelons.
Temic.
So,
low enough levels that it doesn't translocate into the fruit, but, you know, it's a new class of chemicals. It's neonicotinoid. It has been linked to problems with bees.
That's what I've heard today. People were emailing me, bees.
It's a huge problem. But
so, now, are the commercial growers trying to make this so difficult that it's impossible for home gardeners to have citrus trees?
No, I don't think that the goal is to make it impossible, but they want to make sure that there's enough safeguarding measures in place that you're not going to get compromised because of trees that are going to go, you know, into people's backyards. We can produce the trees very cleanly on the nursery end, but at some point we have to ship that out. Whether it goes to someone's backyard or goes into a grove, it's ultimately going to be the responsibility of the person that plants that tree to keep it from becoming compromised by the bug.
Okay, this is very interesting. Now, the next thing to me is, what happens if we just go, oh, well, let's live with it. And that's what we'll pick up when we come back from this final break. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson here. We are talking about Huanglong Bing, the yellow dragon disease that could, if left unchecked, eat up all of our citrus, thus depriving you and I of those oranges and those seedless mandarins and those Meyer lemons and all of those things that make our lives so interesting. We are talking with Aaron Dillon, fourth generation grower of Four Winds Nursery, and you. We will be right back after these messages with a final thought, which is, what happens if we just throw our hands up in the air and say, oh well, right back. Well, goodness sakes, there's hope. And there is hope because there's a lot of money in citrus. $2 billion just here in California alone. Not to mention everybody's backyard that lives in a temperate zone. So is there any hope in this?
We'd like to believe that there is hope. Science is attacking this problem from many different angles. Again, like you said, it's a worldwide problem. So we're really looking forward to, in February, there will be the third annual international research symposium on HLB in Orlando. And this is 4 or 5 days of just nonstop presentations about novel ways people are trying to come up to combat this. They've identified compounds in guava trees, which can act as a repellent. They've identified a wasp species. A researcher from UC Riverside named Mark Hoddle traveled to Pakistan, where the psyllid is native. They found a wasp called Tamarixia that they've started rearing and releasing.
Okay, so there, you know, it does have natural predators. What about the hope in embodied in genetic engineering?
That's also maybe a venue that might work. They're in Texas at the Texas A&M Ag Engineering Department. They identified a gene in spinach that acts as a bactericide, and they spliced that into citrus trees. And in the lab setting, they didn't get infected with canker or with citrus greening. So they've taken those trees and they've got them growing outside in Florida with 20-foot razor wire around them so they can't escape and, you know, continue. contaminate the population. And but we're expecting it might be a 10-year process before they're going to be able to evaluate them.
Out in the countryside, we see BT corn, BT soybeans, BT everything. What about BT dwarf citrus?
I just saw there's going to be a conference coming up in Fort Collins at the end of August where they're going to try to outline future research agendas. And that was one of the topics, was trying to manipulate BT to insert it into citrus so that it could target specific pests.
Wow. So, Aaron Dillon, fourth-generation grower of Four Winds Nursery, you know, your father looked at you when you were coming up and thinking about getting involved in the family nursery, and he said, son, get the heck out of here, because sooner or later they're going to come here and lock the gate, and because there's going to be a bug and they're going to quarantine you and you won't be able to sell anything and you're just going to go broke. So go away. But you didn't. You came back. Over the past couple decades, gosh, we've had the Mediterranean fruit fly, we've had great phylloxera, we've had the glassy wing sharpshooter, we have the light brown apple moth, we have this, we have that. There, and it seems like these critters come and everybody goes into a tiz, and journalists like myself jump up and down and hoot and holler, and then it just seems to like fizzle out, and there you are. So what if we just throw up our hands on this thing and say, what the heck?
Well, that's kind of what's happened in Florida. You know, they didn't react quickly enough. That's one of the real key components to keeping the growers healthy, is that they have to scout and look for infected trees. As soon as they see an infected tree, they need to pull it and remove it. And by leaving trees with infection within the grove, they're starting to have much more levels of spread. They're finding that by doing foliar feeding, so feeding it from the top, again, the phloem's what's being destroyed, they're keeping these things alive. But it's not really perfect, right?
And propagating the problem.
Letting it go will cause significant increases in cost of production and cost of oranges.
So that $25 dwarf seedless mandarin might cost you $8,500.
Well, let alone the fruit at the market.
And the fruit at the market. So that's where we're at, folks. What do you think? Do you think we'll make it, Aaron?
We have a great opportunity in California because we have such a strong industry that has gotten on this onto this problem early. But we're not out of the woods.
There you go, folks. It all goes to prove that cheap food isn't. Thank you all for tuning in. More next week. Do stay tuned.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.